We're back. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your host, Josh Lane. And calling in this evening from Cyprus is Jeff Bond, the author of the new book, Paleo in a Nutshell, a book which talks about living and eating the way that nature intended, which is a very broad title. But I read the book, and I like the book a lot. And Jeffrey Bond has a long history of working with nutrition. Mr. Bond, thank you for calling in this evening.
It's a pleasure to be speaking with you, Josh.
Now, the word paleo has been used quite a bit recently, but can you please define the term for my listeners?
Yes, it relates to the Paleolithic time of human beings, that is to say, the old Stone Age. And I've been studying and working on this whole idea of living the lifestyle to which nature basically adapted us to, which was during the Paleolithic time. But much more recently, the label paleo has been attached to this way of living, and in particular to the way of eating. And so that is where it comes from, Paleolithic. So it means eating and living in the way that people used to back in the old Stone Age. And well, the big breakthrough really came back in the 1980s when we understood that we're still living in bodies and with brains and with digestive systems, with biochemistries that are designed for life back then. Mm-hmm. And that for all intents and purposes, our bodies and our minds haven't changed since then.
Oh, we're speaking with Mr. Jeffrey Bond, author of the new book, Paleo in a Nutshell. So we're supposed to eat the way our ancestors ate. So the idea is obviously no processed sugar, no chemicals and preservatives. Now, those are basic, in a good way, natural foods ideas that have been current for, as long as the natural foods movement has been around, which is maybe the past 150 years in Britain and the United States. So what does paleo add to it? Does it add more anthropological evidence?
Well, I think it's very interesting because really, until very recently, nobody approached the whole idea of how we should be eating from the point of view of, well, what is it that human beings should be designed to eat? We know if you go to the zoo, that the zookeeper, he knows how to feed a giraffe, and if he feeds it on hamburgers and popcorn, that it gets sick and dies. He feeds an ostrich in a different kind of way, and he knows how to feed them, but we don't know how to feed human beings from an anthropological point of view. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until it was really in the 1980s that the clincher came from studies of genetics, when we understood that everybody on this planet is descended from a small group of people who lived 2,000 generations ago in the savannas of East Africa. And as I said, that we basically have still got the same bodies and minds that are designed for life back then. And that if we can try and emulate that particular kind of lifestyle in today's world, it is possible, then we will avoid getting what are amounts of the big lifestyle diseases today, the cancer, the heart disease, the osteoporosis, the diabetes, the Alzheimer's, and so many others, these are all the major diseases today are diseases due to the mismatch between what nature designed us for and the way we live today.
Right, right. No, I certainly agree with that. We're speaking with Jeff Bond, the author of a new book called Paleo in a Nutshell. Now, Mr. Bond, many people recognize the importance of lifestyle, that is, what to do for a profession, if they're working in some dangerous industry, working with toxic chemicals, if they're farmers spraying toxic pesticides or insecticides, if they're eating, sodas and processed meats. So how does the person, in your opinion, start out to have a more healthy, make better choices?
Well, strangely enough, I don't focus so much on the business of pesticides and toxic chemicals and so on. Sure, you can overdose on them and they're not very good for us. But I focus more on the basic specification of the food supply mm-hmm. compared to the way we do today. And one of the major specifications is that our food supply for human beings is that it should be what we call low glycemic. That is to say, it doesn't give you sharp blood sugar spikes. Mm-hmm. And today, our supply does the opposite. It gives us sharp blood sugar spikes. And one of the major factors in giving us high blood sugar spikes is the consumption of grains and, of course, sugars, as you mentioned. But the grains is a big surprise because we all come to think that, well, grains, they're the staff, bread is the staff of life, isn't it? And isn't this what we're all supposed to be eating? Well, no. One of the things we've discovered is that human beings, it's not basically human food, grains. In fact, I sometimes in my talks say, amusingly, that grains are for the birds, for chickens. They're chicken
feed. Right.
Grains are rich in starches. Starches is nothing other than the sugar molecules joined together, and the body unzips that back into sugar, and they give you a blood sugar rush. And so one of the major problems in the modern diet, and this is dating basically since the farming revolution, just 300 or 400 years ago in the Middle East, any rate, and so grains and the consumption of grains on a bigger and bigger scale just in the last 100 years has just meant that we're now over-consuming and giving ourselves blood sugar rushes, which is one of the reasons why we talk about in the paleo diet of, yes, basically grains are for the birds and they're not for human beings. They've got other drawbacks as well. For example, they've got compounds in them that our bodies don't know how to handle, like gluten. They've got anti-nutrients in them, which are other plant poisons that, again, our bodies don't know how to handle. They are micronutrient poor. Human beings are designed to work on a high plant food diet, which is rich in micronutrients. They're not even alkalizing, and the body also requires a certain amount of alkalizing in the diet. So, grains are basically one of the major problems in today's diet. And one of the first things I recommend to people is they try and wean themselves off grains as much as possible and substitute. Well, it's the standard the colored plant foods, you know, that we hear so much about, the salads, the vegetables, and the fruits.
Right, right. We're speaking with Jeff Bond, the author of Paleo in a Nutshell. Now, your critique on the problems associated with the use of grains is one that the natural foods community has been discussing for at least the past 30 or 35 years. But I noticed that in the past 4 or 5 years, there seems to be a major shift in the thinking of almost all progressive nutritionists that indeed grains are very problematic. Now, if people are to move away from grains and they're going to start to eat more vegetables, which seems like a good idea, what about the use of protein food?
Yes, let me give you a little secret. I was brought up, born during the Second World War in Britain, in London, when we were on rations, and I was brought up as a vegetarian, which was a pretty geeky thing to be doing at the time. But the thing was that we didn't have much to eat at the time, but we were on rations, which made sure that we got enough nutrients of various kinds, and in particular, proteins. And they gave us, that's another subject, but they gave us cheese instead of the occasional rasher of bacon. But when we're talking about proteins, yes, human beings are designed to eat animal matter, as I call it. And, of course, they'll be eating all kinds of stuff, apart from the classic foodstuffs that we'd imagine the men are going off and hunting, gazelle and antelope and maybe the occasional giraffe and so on. They would be eating what the women might be bringing back, tortoises and turtles and lizards and things like that, too. Now, I'm not saying we should be going off and eating that. That's the good news. We don't have to be eating those kinds of protein-rich foods. We can eat plenty of protein-rich foods, eating just buying stuff in the normal supermarket. But there is that little bit of a danger at the moment, particularly with the major red meats that aren't like the kinds of meats that were in our ancient past, mainly because of the way they're fed and mainly because of the kind of fats that are in them, and that's the major problem. So otherwise, yes, seafood of all kinds, tree nuts of all kinds, they're good in protein-rich foods, you know, various kinds of fowl, certainly duck, goose, and so on. Avoid the broiler chickens, the poor old things. They have, apart from having a terrible life, they've really got very bad fatty acid profiles. There's plenty of options if you're going to keep your mind open on that front.
Wow. So, Mr. Bond, you are now a man, if you're born during the Second World War, you're now a man roughly about 70. What are you using as a protein source if you're not happy with chicken particularly and you feel beef is not a great idea and possibly pork's not a great idea? So what are the protein sources other than, say, almonds or something that you would like to recommend the listeners of Here's to Your Health use?
Well, I do say, do focus on seafood, and in particular, this is another aspect of it. Human beings are designed to work on some essential fatty acids, one of which are the famous omega-3s, and of which the best source, and the sources that were mainly available to us in our ancient homeland, were from what we call seafood, but for them were lake foods, fishes and various kinds of shellfish and so forth. So, yes, seafood's fine, of all kinds. As I say, we tend to steer clear of the beef, the lamb, and the pork, but otherwise we were working on poultry. Yes, all right, as I say, chicken, but organic chicken, free-range chicken, yeah, I work on that. Turkey, ditto. I don't want to get too extreme on these things, right, because I think we can go overboard on saying, oh, you just cut them out, they're terrible. Steer clear of, as I say, for the moment. Who knows? Ranchers are getting more and more cute at feeding their cattle better, at breeding them back to the original forms that they were 10,000 years ago. And who knows? Maybe in 10 or 15 years' time we can say, okay, beef, lamb and pork, they're just the same now as the original aurochs, the same as the original mouflon, or the same as the original wild boar. But at the moment they're not.
Right. Right. We're speaking with Jeff Bond, who's calling in this evening from his home in Cyprus, and the book is Paleo in a Nutshell, Living and Eating the Way Nature Intended, a very nicely done book. We're kind of coming to the end of the interview, but I thought one thing that I found interesting in the book was Mr. Bond mentioned that Eskimos oftentimes are eating fish, which seems like a good thing, but you mentioned in the book that they actually eat the fish frozen. And I thought to myself, I'd never read that before. That did not seem very glamorous at all.
Well, I'm not. I'm certainly not advising people to go and follow the Eskimo diet. I mean, it's a lesson for us. We draw some interesting lessons from the Eskimo way of life, but of course, it's nothing like the way human beings were designed for.
Right.
You know, living in a place which has 6 months without any sunshine is definitely not the way to be. But second, but on the other hand, one of the things they do have is a diet rich in, as you say, seafood.
Right.
In particular, they were eating frozen seal, perhaps not so much the fish, but certainly frozen seal and whale meat and so on. All of them very rich in these famous omega-3s. And they were so rich, in fact, that they almost overate them. The omega-3 is very, one of the things it does is it contains very powerful, well, the body makes very powerful hormones called eicosanoids from it, which thin the blood, amongst other things. And so, you know, Eskimos, if they're not careful, could die of a nosebleed because the blood just doesn't clot as well as it should do. That's going overboard in the opposite direction.
Right.
But believe me, it's very hard to do that in the ordinary Western way of life.
Mr. Bond, this is a very interesting interview. We've run out of time. We've been speaking with Jeff Bond, author of a new book, Paleo in a Nutshell, Living and Eating the Way Nature Intended. A very interesting and worthwhile book. I'm very, very happy to read it. This is Josh Lane. You're listening to Here's to Your Health. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back after these important messages.
Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. Most American diets are low in cold water fish that are abundant in important omega-3 oils. DHA and EPA are the vital components of fish oil that provide healthy benefits. Not only are they crucial for brain and vision development, they're very important for cardiovascular health. Carlson, America's leading Norwegian fish oil brand, specializes in both great-tasting soft gels that are easy to swallow and fish oil liquids that don't taste fishy. That's right. Carlson provides the most extensive line of fish oils to meet all your needs. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today. That's right. Ask for Carlson Norwegian fish oils today.
We're back. Thank you for... Let me start again. We're back. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your host, Josh Lane. And calling in this evening is one of my regular contributors to Here's to Your Health, Michelle Hamerton. Michelle Hamerton and I have been friends for many years. And Michelle is the president and the founder of the Ancient Essence Frankincense and Myrrh Company. And Michelle was the one who really convinced me to use frankincense and myrrh, which I always mention whenever Michelle's on the air, how successful the use of frankincense and myrrh have been on my skin for some skin issues that I had of a reasonably serious nature, you know, and how my skin is just so much healthier and better. And I'm just so pleased that Michelle was the person who really helped me use the frankincense and myrrh. Michelle, thanks for calling in this evening.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Josh.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy to have you on the show. And we were chatting, you know, before you went on the air, and you mentioned, among other things, that, you know, you're very much involved with wellness, that you've been following a new program recently, several new ideas, and that you've dropped a certain amount of weight and you're feeling much stronger. What are some of the new ideas you're incorporating into your lifestyle?
Oh, thanks for asking. I'd be happy to talk about them. Well, one of the things I did was a 7-day juice fast. And I found this online for free through TylerTolman.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very enlightening because every day he would send videos and PDFs on different things about health. And about on the fourth day, he mentioned about intermittent fasting, which he said that the ancient Egyptians practiced, knowing that the body has three different 8-hour circadian rhythms during the course of the 24-hour period. And the first time was from 4 a.m. to 12 noon. And that was the time that your body was in detox from everything that you ate the day before. So if you have breakfast and break the fast with breakfast, then you're taking away from your body's 8-hour detox and cutting it back, you know, day after day, year after year. You're cutting off part of the detox program that your body would naturally go through. So this could develop into sickness and disease. So they believe that the best time to eat is at high noon when the sun is at its highest peak, and that is your 8-hour period. So by 6 or 7 o'clock, you want to be kind of finishing up so that, you know, by the time 8 o'clock rolls around, you're well into starting your assimilation of the foods you ate of the day. And then from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m., is when the body assimilates all that you ate for the day. And then again, from 4 a.m. to 12 noon, you're back in the detox. So this has been working out great for me because I've never been a breakfast person anyway. So this has been a great program, and I do see a big drop in weight. Now, I will say this. I did lose 30 pounds in about 2 months, but I must also say that I did go through a point where it was about 3 weeks, and I didn't see the scale moving, and I'm like, what is going on, you know? But then all of a sudden, like, overnight, I lost 7 pounds overnight, and I was like, whoa, okay, great. So now I know there's that little two to five pound fluctuation, obviously. Everybody has that during the course of the day. But this was, like, really steady, 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 and then all of a sudden, boom, it dropped way down. And I noticed that drop when I started the Rainbow Diet, which is another protocol from Tyler's father, Don Tolman. And Don Tolman talks about the Rainbow Diet that all the ancient Egyptians and different other cultures practiced in the past. And they would follow, starting with red foods one day, and then orange foods the next, and then yellow, and then the next day after that is green, and then blue, and indigo, and violet. So yesterday I completed it, and I have to tell you that I felt really the best after the red day. I don't know if that's because I just accomplished finally doing the rainbow diet that I had been procrastinating for a long time, or if truly the red foods were really what my body needed the best. I don't know, but I'm going to go back to red foods again tomorrow. Today I had to have the food I was jonesing for all this time.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure.
So yeah, I'm going to try the red foods and see if that's really what it was, or it was just my happiness to be able to finally get through with it, you know?
Now, Michelle, you have been a careful person for a very long time with lifestyle. What foods did you cut out of your regime that allowed you also to, you know, drop, as you said, 30 pounds? I mean, what was it that you decided, okay, I can't eat this anymore?
vegetarian of most of the last, since you've known me, Josh, yeah. like 40, 45 years, something like that. But on and off, you know, I would go back to eating meat here and there.
Right.
Well, I live in a very small town, and there's lots of barbecue joints around. It's kind of like redneck Florida where I live.
Huh, right.
But it happens to be that a little vegan restaurant opened up in town, and I was like thrilled, and I was like, wow, I have to support them. I want them to stay in business. So I started eating there like three times a week, vegan, and I was like, oh, I feel so good. I love eating here. It's great food, great vibes, you know. And then finally, when I would not eat there at home, I would start making vegan food for myself at home. And then I noticed, huh, my clothes are starting to get a little looser, you know. So that started off in February. Well, then come the end of March, well, mid-March, I started coming down with a sinus infection, I couldn't shake it, so I had to go to the doctor and get some penicillin. And when I did, she weighed me in at 182 pounds.
Right.
So I know how much I weighed at the end of March, so you can imagine, if I did drop any weight from February to March, you know, I don't know what it was, but it's possible, you know. Now, another thing I want to tell you is that period of 3 weeks when I wasn't dropping any weight, I was still dropping inches because my clothes were getting smaller and smaller, the sizes that I had to put on, you know, when I was trying on clothes, because I'm going away on a vacation, so I had to be trying clothes, and now I'm in a size small. I'm so thrilled.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, it's nice to be trim. You feel good. The body feels good. You feel light and supple. Now, have you also, since you and I have worked so closely with the use of the frankincense and the myrrh, are you using frankincense and myrrh on your skin? Have you noticed, with the addition of the change in lifestyle, you know, changing some foods that you're eating, how is your skin?
Oh, yeah, I have. What I've done is I've taken some of my, I have a coconut oil that's fractioned, so it doesn't have the smell, but it happens to sink into the skin much better than regular coconut oil that you would eat, you know. And then I put my myrrh oil in there, okay? Now, that's what I go outside in because I do a lot of gardening or swimming in the pool, and so I want to get nice and color for my daughter's wedding next week. So I put that all over. Now, the myrrh is going to stop me from getting bit by the ants, mosquitoes, and all that. And also the mixture of the myrrh with the oil is giving me a nice base tan. Now, also, I have another thing to report because, you know, people had told me all through the years about their skin cancers falling off and this and that. And I remember even you, Josh, you said that you had a little something on the back of your hand that
right.
came off.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to tell you that I had a little spot coming up on my chest. And it was a little black thing, and I thought, you know I can get rid of this with my frankincense and myrrh. So I didn't pay much attention to it, and I really wasn't really, like, diligently putting stuff on it. Well, you know what? It started getting a little bit bigger. And then it started getting itchy with the red ring around it, and I looked online, and that was skin cancer. I was like, oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So I started diligently putting the oil on it, like, 2 and 3 times a day. And one day it was just all dried up, and the next day it just flaked off, and it's been gone ever since.
Right. Good for you. Yeah. That, I tell you, some people listening to the broadcast this evening might think, oh, we find that hard to believe, but I know how well the frankincense or the myrrh work on these skin issues, and I just wanted, that's a personal recommendation as well, and I'm glad it worked for you as well. And also, this makes the skin very lovely. And so when you use myrrh, do you find it, do you prefer one over the other, or do you like them both?
Well, I really do like them both. They both, the two mix, the blend that we have is really our best seller. That's our number one seller of all. We've got 16 different blends now. It just so happens that in my bathroom, I happen to have a big old bottle of myrrh sitting there. So that's the one that I squirted into the coconut oil to use. But yeah, and also, you know, if it's the oil is a little bit dark, it's got that brown color. They both have it though. So really it's a matter of preference of something. If you like the smell of it or you don't, you know, you use one or the other. Or like I said, most people prefer the blend, you know?
Right. Right. And when you apply the frankincense or the myrrh, how do you like to put it on at night before you go to bed, or how do you like to use it?
Well, if you put it on at night before you go to bed, it's very relaxing. It helps you sleep, it helps you breathe. So it has a lot of good benefits for at nighttime.
Okay.
But you can also use it as an astringent on your face during the day by mixing it up with a little bit of water. That also works very nicely. And you can also, you know, just put it on whenever you feel like you want a little bit of relaxation during the day to get rid of stress from, like, road rage or, you know, children are getting too loud and you want to just calm down. Actually, it works really good for the children as well. Calm them down. So even just having the smell of it around in the house, it really does a lot of good.
Michelle, that sounds very good. We've been speaking with Michelle Hamerton, the president and the founder of the Ancient Essence Frankincense and Myrrh Company. Michelle Hamerton, a longtime advocate of wellness. I've been friends with Michelle for many years. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Here's to Your Health with Joshua Lane. If you have any questions about the guests or topics discussed tonight, please give us a call at 818-707-0005. That number is 818-707-0005. This is Josh Lane. On behalf of the cast and crew, I would like to wish you a healthy and safe good evening.
Listen to KCAA Loma Linda for less confrontation and more information. It's time to make the Tri-City Center in Redlands a regular part of your weekly shopping experience. Tri-City is home to a wide assortment of quality businesses. Soon, the Tri-City Center will become home to DC Furniture and Ocean Aquatics. You can purchase good quality furniture and accessories at DC Furniture. Ocean Aquatics will offer a wide variety of exotic tropical fish along with food, accessories, and tanks of all shapes and sizes for every home or business. The Tri-City Center is located just off the I-10 between Alabama and the Tennessee exits in Redlands. Visit the Tri-City Center today and discover why it's called the Mall with a Heart. KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.